before you can win games, you got to win your culture.
On this episode of the Rising Coaches Podcast, we welcome Corey McCray, assistant coach for Boston College men's basketball team. McCray has built a strong reputation as a relentless recruiter and developer of talent with deep ties to the grassroots basketball community. Before joining Boston College, he spent several years as an assistant coach at Delaware, where he helped elevate the program through his recruiting connections and player development. Prior to Delaware, his coaching career began in the grassroots ranks with powerhouse DeMatha Catholic High School, where he coached and mentored some of the nation's top players and gained valuable experience in building relationships with athletes and families. Known for his energy, passion, and ability to connect with players, McCray has quickly risen through the coaching world. His unique background gives him a strong perspective on both grassroots and Division I coaching. In this episode, we discuss some daily and cultural habits his staff look to instill to help grow a team, his growth and transition from the grassroots level to the college ranks, as well as some similarities coaching between grassroots and the Division I ranks. Please welcome to the podcast, Corey McCray. Help your players get more out of their training sessions with our friends at Dr. Dish Basketball. As the official shooting machine of Rising Coaches and the number one selling shooting machine in the world, Dr. Dish provides an experience packed with more reps, more motivation, and just plain out more fun. Be sure to mention Rising Coaches for an additional $250 off select Dr. Dish shooting machines. Welcome everyone, coaches and everybody out there. Thank you for tuning in to another episode of the Rising Coaches Podcast. Alan Major, Doug Caputo here today. On the podcast, we are joined today to be able to chat with the assistant coach, BC, Boston College. You can see it behind him, Coach Corey McCray. Coach McCray, welcome to the podcast. What's going on?
Thanks, man. I appreciate it. Thanks for having me this morning. Not much going on. Actually, a lot going on, guys. Just started school and campus is buzzing, and we've hit the ground running, so it's a lot going on. But I appreciate you guys having me. I'm extremely humbled and grateful for this opportunity.
Yeah, of course. No, we're excited to be able to just get an opportunity with you now. For reference, season's going to be, I guess, relatively right around the corner, so things are really picking up for you now. So to be able to get you when you're busy, we appreciate that. But happy to just be able to chop it up, talk some hoops.
Absolutely, man. I'm excited. I'm ready.
Let's do it.
All right. So I love the excitement. I guess the first thing that kind of dive into, especially for you, what we like to always do is just look back under the scope, look at the career, what you've done so far, and obviously what we anticipate to just come in the future. But you spent years coaching at the grassroots level. I think that is a huge thing, especially for people who are going to be listening. Yep. Grassroots, AAU levels, DeMatha Catholic. What was that transition like going from that AAU, that high school ranks, to then coaching your first position in college? And ultimately, how did that kind of spiral up?
Unbelievable. I'm extremely grateful. I'm extremely fortunate. I'm one of the lucky ones, man. I really am. I played at DeMatha Catholic High School for Morgan Wooten. I graduated in 2002. And then after that, I went and played for Derek Wittenberg, another DeMatha guy, at Wagner College. And then I graduated with Derek at Fordham. In 2006, I came back and started coaching a seventh grade basketball team, a middle school team. I just wanted to coach. I had a contract overseas. It fell through. I probably wasn't good enough, and it fell through. So I started coaching the seventh grade, eighth grade middle school team. And then Mike Jones, who's the current head coach at Old Dominion, was actually an assistant coach while I was at DeMatha. He was the head coach at DeMatha after Morgan left. So in 08, he said, hey, man, why don't you come back home and come back home? So I went there. Absolutely loved it. I coached there from 08 to 2016. And Martin Inglesby, who was the GA at Wagner my freshman year, after we went to the NCAA tournament, he went back to Notre Dame and started coaching. And in 2016, he got the job at Delaware and hired me. Hired a high school assistant coach. That doesn't happen. But he hired me. He always said, hey, man, I like how you're doing things. My high school and AAU, if I ever get a job, I'll hire you. And Alan, you know how this thing works. People say, hey, I'm going to hire you. And it never happens, right?
Yeah, till they don't. Until
the opportunity where they get a job. And then they say, hey, man, yeah, you're on my short list. Or, hey, as soon as this guy moves, I'm going to move you. But Martin did that. But from the transition to your initial question is this. Mike Jones prepared me so much for college in terms of how he does things. He ran DeMatha like a college, from the time commitment to the details. He is my mentor, and I'm forever grateful for him because he gave me an opportunity of a lifetime, and he prepared me in terms of scouting and recruiting, all those kind of things. And with that, I still wasn't ready for college when I got there. I had so much to learn. I felt like I got hit by a Mack truck when I first got there from coaching AAU. So it's a difference when you're on the sidelines coaching AAU and you're across recruiting, right? Because when you're on the sidelines, you're locked into your team and your team only versus the team you're playing against. You get those guys, you get them ready, you get them up, you feed them, you play your game. You may go back to the hotel, you may not. And then that's your day, right? And you're preparing for the next day. But when you're a college coach, you are there from 8 o'clock in the morning to the last game, right? That's what you're supposed to do. And while Mike Jones prepared me, Martin Inglesby got me to the next level because he said, hey, man, listen, slow down. I know it's a lot going on right now. I know there's a big transition. Just take one day at a time. Don't worry about what's happening tomorrow. Don't worry about what happened. Just focus on the 24 hours that you got. So those two guys prepared me and helped me. Mike, in terms of making sure I was ready for that level professionally, how you groomed yourself, how you talked, how you act on the road, how you travel. And Martin, once I got there, he was great for me. So the transition, while it was smooth because of the two men that took me under their wings, it was still hard because I still didn't know what college was like.
You know, what's great about that, though, Corey, is this, and I hope people listening really pull away from what you just said. Two things. One, even though, you know, DeMatha, that's as close to college basketball as you can get. So yeah, even though you weren't a full-time, maybe college basketball coach at that time, that was a college basketball internship for you for 8 years.
Yeah.
So you were still getting your feet wet and cutting your teeth even more than you realize, because wow, DeMatha is a machine. So you were in college basketball before you were actually, before you got to that level, just because that was your internship. You had an 8-year internship.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then I hope coaches that want to get into college that are maybe doing the grassroots thing and they, man, how can I get a chance or whatever, take heart in the fact that, think about the number of reps you got coaching at the grassroots level.
Yeah.
So you had unbelievable reps, obviously, with DeMatha, but then at the grassroots level, you get, it's 65 games in a summer.
Yeah.
With your team.
Yeah.
So you got a ton of reps at the grassroots level. Then you got the internship with DeMatha. That's unbelievable preparation. When, even though Delaware, you were drinking off a fire hose when you got there. But man, that's two great stepping stones, man, of preparation that, you know, that really probably helped you get ready more than you realize.
It did. And I'm so glad you said that, because I never even thought of it like that. I just thought of it, hey, it's just the work, because that's what it is. You run your race, you put your head down, you don't think about it, and you just put one foot in front of the other and you just grind. And one thing I've learned, and I'm learning this, everybody has their own different grind. Some guys come in from the GA route and they grind their way up, which is a lane and an avenue of its own. And that's a grind too. Guys that come from the grassroots level, we do pickup at home, we do drop off. We wash the clothes, we wash the jerseys, we max out credit cards so kids can be able to have an experience. We put our families in a situation where, jokingly, but my wife was like, hey, something's got to give here at some point, because it's the time commitment. So one thing I'm learning is everybody has their route, and it's okay which route you go. One is not better or worse than the other. That's just your lane to get to ultimately, you know, where you want to be. And mine was the grassroots, man. Mine was the, talking about getting it out the mud. That was the mud for me. That was the mud. And I've just learned that having great people around you, and God has blessed me with some unbelievable people who have helped me to get here. And I'm not even close to where I want to be or who I am, but the people that have helped me get to this point, I'm forever grateful for them, because you cannot do this thing alone. If you think you're good enough, you've lost already, because I'm not.
Yeah, no question, man. Nah, but you're right. Everybody's got to run their own race in terms of their grind. But I heard an unbelievable quote just recently. Pain is temporary, but growth lasts forever. Yeah. So the pain that you're dealing with as you're grinding along and like, when is this going to end? It's actually toughening your skin. You're getting lizard skin as you're going through that.
100%.
And so that stuff does pass, but what you become from it, that stays with you.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And so that's what's so good about what you just said, man. And that's going to hit somebody's ears when this drops and they listen to this.
Appreciate it.
Absolutely. And I want to make sure I didn't say this either, that correct me if I'm wrong. Did you start as an athletic trainer before you even got full time into coaching?
So it's so funny how this thing works. So when I was in coaching the middle school team, one of the assistant coaches at Fordham, his name is Alex Gruthius. He's now a head coach in Florida doing an unbelievable job. He was actually supposed to go out to Vegas with Joe Abunasar to work out his guy.
Okay.
And he couldn't do it. And he called Joe and Joe hired me. And I didn't even know Joe was working for Andy Miller at the time, ASM, I think it was. And I had no clue. And I went out there and I helped train some of the guys. So My core group was, and these are names from the past, my core group was Quincy Doobie, Cedric Simmons, Ryan Gomes, and Patrick O'Brien. And I went to Vegas and I learned so much from Joe and those guys on just the organization, right? Because when you get in the gym and you train guys, you train them, right? And you work them out and a guy may come in at 6, another guy coming at 7, or you may have a group. Like, I would work out guys at DeMatha, James Robinson and Jeremy Grant. Those guys were professionals in the 10th and 11th grade of how they carried themselves. So part of you talking about the grind, Alan, part of my grind was 5:30, 6 o'clock in the morning. I had to be there, and I was working out with guys. But you work them out, and then you get groups. But I think what I learned from Joe Abunasar was just the organization and professionalism. They had a group lifting and a group working out, and then they would switch. They would eat and come back to play all the pros. So I learned just the organization and how those things work. So I did do that for spring until summer. So it was more so like March, April, pre-draft, and then summer league. And right after summer league, I left.
Now, you know what's great about that, man? It's like when you work out pros and you're with those guys, that their time is precious.
Yeah.
Which forces you in a healthy way as a coach to be one, prepared, and two, efficient.
Yeah.
And so they can get the most out of that hour and a half or whatever you're with them.
Yeah.
But I always love, I hate when coaches, we get so much credit for developing players, but those guys developed you too, because that night before, when you know they're coming in the next day, your gears are turning.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
And you're like, okay, what Cedric Simmons need here? Okay, let's do this stuff where he's maybe off the lane today. He's got a small on your back and you're doing some off the lane face up stuff or whatever that case may be. Like those gears are turning to get you ready, but that's making you a better coach. So players develop us just like we develop them.
And you don't even realize it.
It's a partnership. Absolutely.
Yeah.
That's the great part too of working with great players is it makes you have to expand. You have to go find alternative ways to teach things. You have to find like different drills that you can use to work on basically the same concepts. Because if you're not, exactly what you're saying, you're going to be in a rut. But then with the player development side, so just moving forward a little bit, you end up stepping in that, as we said, you get that first position in college at Delaware.
Yeah.
The one thing about I saw with Delaware was you guys had continuously just increased your wins year by year and then ultimately just having like great season and putting together great seasons. What were some of the main things that the mindset was for the coaching staff of this is how we're going to improve over the years? Because obviously you didn't know you were going to improve, but looking back on it, what were some of the things that you focused on to help with that?
I think Alan can attest to one of the things is getting better players, right? You take over a program that won 7 games before you got there, and then we went from 13 to 14 to 17. Then we had our COVID year of 21, and then another year, and then we went to the tournament. So I think things like the little things, the details of everything, I think that improved. I think our togetherness continue to improve, because I just believe, and one thing I've learned from Martin and Coach Grant here is, before you can win games, you got to win your culture. You have to, because you can't just plug and play. Some teams can, but you got to have the best players to just plug and play. But when you don't have the best players and you're grinding, I think you got to really win your culture before you can win games. And I thought we did that. And Martin's culture of togetherness, selflessness, just sacrifice, and those guys bought in. But one of the biggest things, and we dealt with the whole transfer deal because guys were leaving and starting to go high major, but not for money, but just because they had a little bit of success. We were able to keep and retain a group of guys that grew together. So by their senior year, we were able to win it. We plugged in a few transfers, and then a few of our older guys just got more mature and said, you know what, hey, this thing is almost over. It's not about me. How can we make this thing work? So I think some of those things, and I just think our daily habits just got better. Martin Inglesby learned from one of the best in Mike Bray. Mike Bray he's charismatic and he's positive. And sometimes you look at it and you're like, wow, man, you're overly positive. We need to be getting in these guys' butt. And you just pour so much positivity into the guys and confidence. And that's something I thought Martin did a great job of. And the win started following. And then as those guys got older, and Alan, you can attest to this, is player-led teams are much better than coach-led teams. Hmm. Those guys really bought in and took ownership. And that's one thing. It's so funny. I read hopefully I don't screw this up, but the Navy SEAL Jocko, he has a book called Extreme.
Oh, yeah. Jocko Willink. Extreme ownership.
If anybody's out there listening, that is a book that you must read.
No doubt.
And our guys took ownership of our program. And we just not set back, but we said, hey, man, if this thing is going to happen, it's going to happen with you guys and the way you do it. That player-led team and those guys just gelling and staying together was very important for us. And it's harder now at the mid-major level because guys have one or two good seasons and they're out. We were just fortunate to be able to keep our guys. And COVID actually helped because those guys got a fifth year and they were able to play.
I think the big thing, when you guys probably noticed this in Delaware, and I'm sure Doug and those guys just went through it at Chatham over the last couple of years, when you're trying to build, the thing that really, when you see it turn a little bit, is when you get roster competition. Because sometimes in that first year or two, you're playing guys by force, whereas we can only go eight guys deep. These eight guys got to play. Is it how we want it? No, we got to roll with this. Once you get roster competition, now you can play guys by choice.
Yeah.
So it's a big difference between playing guys by force and playing guys by choice.
Yeah.
And so once you get that roster competition, that makes practice better. That makes your culture better. That makes the accountability better, because there's always somebody else that's ready to go. If one guy, for whatever reason, be it injury or lack of effort or whatever that is, that doesn't allow him to bring it at that particular point. So
that's a great point, because we had 10, 11 guys. We had some freshmen that were good. So we were kind of like, Martin only liked to play. He called us 7.5 guys, but
Mike Bray. That's right.
Yeah. So we had to play some guys and we had some injuries and we had just a few things that happened, and those guys cream rise to the top. And also too, iron sharpens iron. Everybody got better. So we were very fortunate with that.
Yeah, no doubt.
Yeah, I can even attest, like you said, I mean, with a great team, there was just this past, so we're allowed 8 practices before October 15th for Division III. And then with one of those, we just used it last week. So we had a new coaching change and the guys still implemented. Now, we didn't lose one person to the portal first, which is impeccable. It was impressive. And then the very first day of practice, right, this past week, everybody's in there. We have this great senior leader returning, right? And he was hurt last year, so this is his, I'm going 100% in. He ended up having everybody stretching. Our new head coach comes in, and he's looking around. He goes, did you tell them to start stretching? I was like, no, they did it themselves. And he goes, this is going to be good. All right.
It's a good start. No doubt, man.
Yeah. But the senior leadership is 100% a testament to all the successes. And it's evident when it's there. It truly is evident. And it makes your job so much easier.
Oh, absolutely. Because those guys put the pressure.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
No doubt.
Yeah. And they just want to be there. They just want to be there and be able to continue to grow together.
Yeah.
But like on that, just some of, you said some of just like culture is like the biggest thing to be able to start. What are some things that maybe you guys have implemented to help grow that culture? Was there any habits? Was there any, you even said like your daily habits grew on a day-to-day basis. What were some of those things that you guys looked to?
So I think to start out, I think one of the biggest things was some of the guys we recruited, they were gym rats. And when you have, when you're gym rats, it becomes contagious. So when you got guys in there at 6 a.m., those guys are getting better. The guys that may not be 6 a.m. guys or workout guys, or they only think that they should be working out when practice starts, those guys were in the gym more and more because they saw the results. So now you have a culture of work. And when you have a culture of work, you have a culture of competition. And when you have a culture of competition, now you're able to grow. And I think those, that's like the foundation of baseline. It's almost like building a house. You can't start with the framing and electrical and HVAC. You got to start with your foundation. And I think that's where it started. And we were able to build the house from there. I think our attitudes changed. I think our attitudes got better as we went along. Again, when you're first taking over a program, it's hard, right? It's hard. It's sleepless nights. It's just tough. But the guys' attitude started changing. And I think guys started understanding who Martin was. Like, he's not going to MF you every day, right? And there's nothing wrong with those kind of coaches. Everybody has this style. I just think it's a thousand ways to skin a cat. He was just going to pour positivity into you. And guys started believing that they were not better than what they were, but he gave confidence to guys. Because at the end of the day, especially nowadays with NIL and social media, these guys are very insecure. They're scared. And they're in a situation where they're getting paid this money and they're like, oh, wow. I'm talking about right now. They're scared. So it was the same thing years ago when we were at Delaware. Just take out the money part. But the pressure, social media, all those kind of things, they already, it's already, you're down 5 to 10 points when you go into a game. If your mindset is, am I really good enough? Do I belong here? And I thought he did a great job of letting guys know they belong there. And it translated to, Martin is more of an offensive guy, but it translated to making shots. Like, guys started feeling good about themselves and walking around with not an arrogance, but just a confidence like, hey, I belong here. I think the little whispers that he did made those guys really believe. And him having also to him going to back-to-back Elite Eights at Notre Dame, it stamped him and gave him some validity as well.
Yeah. No, no doubt, man. It's funny when you have guys that love to play and just love the hoop, they love to be in the gym. It's really hard to ask guys. I always like to say that when guys love the game, it's hard to ask them to do too much.
Wow. That's good, Alan.
You can't. What's that?
I said, I'm going to jot that down. That's a good nugget.
Oh, no. But it's funny just because they eliminate a lot of things in the equation that maybe we have to worry about as coaches. Let's take guys that maybe that don't love the game. God bless them still. They may be very talented, but maybe they just don't love it. There's more of a tendency for guys to get distracted because they don't quite know what they don't have that love for it. Whereas if guys love it, God forbid that they do something that's going to take away what they love to do. So typically those guys are going to handle their business academically. They're going to understand being on time. They're going to do things the right way. They're going to carry themselves the right way on campus because I'm not letting anything get in the way of my love here.
Absolutely.
And so you don't really have to talk about those things a whole lot because their love carries them throughout the day with all the other stuff because they know, man, this is a 3-hour vacation when I get to the gym. But that's how those guys feel.
To that point, I'm so glad you said they have a why. Like, why
100%.
Am I here? And the guys that don't really love it, it's not, they don't have a why. It's why, I mean, they have a why, but their why is, why do I have to do this? Why am I doing this? Why am I doing that? The other why is I am doing this because of X, Y, and Z. So it's both people, both spectrums are whys, but their whys are different, if that makes sense.
Yeah, for sure.
Completely.
Because the guys that love the game, their why is like the acronym. I like to use the WHY, what hypes you.
Yep. Oh, that's good.
WHY. And so the guys that love the game, it's clear. Like you just said, man, like there's never any doubt. But you're right. If the guys that don't quite have that, again, they could be very talented. Maybe they play because they're good, Maybe they play because they're tall. Maybe they play because Uncle Johnny played and my dad played. I kind of want to play too because my family did it. And that's okay too. But if you want to change your program, you go get some dudes that love to hoop. Yeah. And what's going to happen, like you just said, that changes your gym, that changes your locker room, that changes practice, that changes everything to me. And then again, it puts a healthy pressure on each other to be competitors. Because again, if you're a returning guy that maybe put your time in, and then here comes either a freshman or a transfer that's getting in work, either pre-practice, post, 10 o'clock at night with a manager, it's, oh man, this dude means it.
Yep. I just thought about it. One player's why is a question, the other player's why is a statement.
Yes.
There you go.
Yes. This makes me immediately think of the Kobe Bryant story. I'm sure we all have heard of it or watched the documentary with the Olympics, where everybody was going out partying the night before, and then he was in the gym, and then LeBron, D-Wade, they're all like, all right, let's follow this guy. And everybody slowly started trickling into the weight room, and next thing they got a full team workout going bright and early in the morning. Everybody's that stopped going partying like that. It just sets the standard.
They were getting in from the club, getting on the elevator, and Kobe got off the elevator.
Yeah. Yep.
Like, and they're like, wait a minute, man, it's 5:30. Where are you going?
Yeah.
And all of a sudden that was the redeem team. That whole thing changed, man. They saw this guy's habits. Watch that redeem team documentary. It's on Netflix.
Yep.
Unbelievable. Yep. But that's what, you're right, Dougie. That's what shifted that team. And then they go play Spain in the championship round, in the gold medal game. And he tells them in the huddle, like, hey, fellas, I'm running through Pau Gasol on the first pick and roll he set. So I'm just letting y'all know we're going to hit first tonight.
And Pau knew it too.
He lays him out. And Pau's, yeah, man, we're teammates. And Kobe's like, today we're not teammates. We're not. It's USA versus Spain. We're not teammates today. And he literally ran through him and took a foul to send a message in the gold medal game, and the rest is history. But God rest his soul, man. We miss that dude.
No doubt.
Man, it's hard to talk about that.
You mentioned before the academics, and that's one thing that I wanted to make sure to ask too, because you look over some of the academic support, correct?
Yes, I do.
So with that piece, I feel like the stigma now, I feel like a lot of times people always say, oh, the people at Division I level, they're getting paid so much, they don't necessarily worry about academics. I know that's not the case, and it all depends on, obviously, the certain schools and certain coaches and what their beliefs are. But with the academic support, like, why do you feel, especially building that culture, building those daily habits, why do you feel that's personally, or I should say, we covered why it's so personally good, but more of, like, how do you have that connect to the court? Right? Like the standards that appear in the classroom. How do you guys hold those, your players, to a specific standard?
Well, I think the first thing is most of these guys aren't going to be pros, right? A lot of them are going to be just regular 9-to-5 or whatever, business owners, whatever the case may be. Getting that degree is really important. I think getting a degree is just the cost of admission to get in to life, right? In those areas, unless you've come from a ton of money and you have a whole bunch of stuff just going on for you without you working for it, which is fine. It's just, but most of these guys are not going to be pros. So academically, it was important to me is because I came from the grassroots side, right? So when you come from the grassroots side, you look at it probably from a different lens. These guys, after it's all over, they're going to have to be fathers and be husbands and go get a job and go talk to people. Part of the academics is you doing your work, but going to your teacher, hey, Mr. Smith, how are you doing? I'm Corey McCray. Nice to meet you. Your class is very important to me. I'm going to do everything I can to make sure that I'm successful in your class. It's the same thing when you go pitch your business to an investor. Hey, Mr. Smith, how you doing? This is my idea. This is our concept. This is what I love to do. I would love to get you involved. So all that kind of stuff translates. And the guys don't understand it now because everybody thinks they're a pro, but we see ahead of them. So I think that's why it's important. And I do think that the guys that kind of focus on the academics and the little details of it, I think that does translate. And you have some guys who are just all the way gym rats. And I get that part of it too. But that's probably 1 or 2%. And at Delaware, while those guys are very good, that they're not the guys that's like the Michael Beasley that's going to be in school for 7 or 8 months and get drafted. And I probably have more of a love for that part of it because I came from the side, man. I came from the rough side of it. And you got to wake up, right? You get back at 2-3 o'clock in the morning from a road game. Yeah, you got to get up and go to that 8 o'clock, 9 o'clock class, because what's going to happen is one day your daughter and your son is going to be relying on you to get your butt up, go to work, and call out, because you got to pay that mortgage. You got to pay that tuition. You got to put food on the table. So I think it translates and it goes hand in hand.
Yeah, man, that's so good. I had a mentor tell me one time, and I've never forgotten these two things he told me, and I actually used it in recruiting pitches with families. But I was in grad school, and he was a football coach at the same school, and I was going through grad school. And he said, just, hey, while you're going through this, don't just get your degree, get an education.
Yes.
So continue to find things that are going to inspire you. Don't just treat a degree like a means to an end. But then he said, at the same token, you may not always use the degree that you study for, but the discipline you use to finish it, you'll use that discipline for the rest of your life.
That's big time.
And so I've never forgotten that, because I was literally, I'd gone 2 years in grad school, had one more year, and there was like a restricted earnings position open. I'm dating myself here saying restricted earnings, but there was a restricted earnings position open, and I was thinking about going for it, but I was going to be cutting my master's short. And we went to lunch one day, and I still remember we're standing on this little parking ramp outside of a Division III Cal Lutheran basketball office. And he goes, Alan, he goes, you should go ahead and knock your master's out, get it done. He said, you may not use your degree all the time, but the discipline you use to finish it, you'll use that for the rest of your life. And I never forgotten it, man.
That's important, because even just as you're saying it, I'm listening to you, just being on time, that can put you at the front of the line. You just, if you got to be somewhere at 9 and you get there at 8:45, and the people are like, oh, wow, I didn't know you were going to be there this early, and you're prepared. That stuff is important. That stuff is really important. Even if you become a pro and you play 20 years, you graduate from college, you leave college at 21 and you're 41, you still got to do some things in life that you got to take care of yourself. And you got to take care of your family. That's why I think the academic part is important, because the majority of these guys won't go pro.
I think coaches, we can all do a better job of reminding players, listen, fellas and ladies, business is like hiring athletes now. They know you guys have had to manage two lives or two jobs, in a sense, being a student athlete. Like, athletes are high on the list on a lot of hiring priorities. So if you just take care of your stuff, like, it's going to put you all in a hiring pool. Yeah. You have a chance to separate yourself from the jump just because of what you've managed in this 4 or 5 year period in college.
Absolutely.
No doubt.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah, I know, especially even the showing up 15 minutes early. Like, you have a job interview and you show up right on time. That doesn't look good, right? You got to be at least 15 minutes early. And just little things like that, like those little habits that you instill ultimately grow into the person you are and then become the bigger picture later on. And you could still see those habits later on as you get older. But the one thing I wanted to, and before we wrap it up, is just really AAU, grassroots, high school. I want to tie it all in into one big thing here, is just all the levels you have been at, mid-major, now being at the AC. Has there been anything consistent? Now, I know coaching is coaching at the end of the day, right? But just across those four platforms, AU, high school, mid-major, AC, has there been anything that you feel or is consistent for people who haven't been in those situations that aspire to be at the ACC or the Division I ranks sometime? Is there anything that you see that those AU, those high school days has transitioned into your days now?
I think the biggest thing is, and again, Alan, your job is, you got to win games. Win, and it's about winning and losing at a certain level. But I think the relationships and pouring into guys, and I think Dabo uses this quote of serving their hearts and not their talents. I've gone to weddings. I've gone to some of my players' kids' birthday parties. That part is so important, right? Because you get caught up in all the other stuff. But with having guys over my house to eat dinner, sitting in my office, hey, how you doing? What's going on? What's going on in your life? How your mom? How your dad? How's your family? And they start just opening up and telling you stuff, right? So I think the consistent thing from middle school, coaching those guys to coaching the James Robinson, Jeremy Grants, Markel Fultz of the world, you know, sitting down, talking to those guys, and then at Delaware, having the relationship. I think the relationship part is so important, and especially nowadays with the NIL era, it's even more important because they need us more than they know. I just want to give Earl Grant his flowers. There's not a coach in the country that cares more for their players than he does. He always talks about it. He has three sons, and he's going to treat these guys like his kids, and he pours in. So I just think the relationship part, you're trying to figure out how to be as transformational in a, as trying to figure out how to be as transformational as you can during the most transactional times that college athletics has ever seen. And I think the biggest thing is just doing what God has put into your heart and being true to that. You're always going to be able to get a job. It may be here, maybe there, whatever the case may be. But these kids are in your care for the time that you have them. And you got to do that. Now, love is love. Love isn't just soft and rubbing you and telling you, hey, this is just, you know, pampering you. It's tough love and hard love. And I think you got to give both truths to the kids. It's like a sandwich. You got to hit them hard. You got to love them. Then you got to come back and hit them again. So I just think love, tough love and other kind of love, because they need it. They need both. And I think that's something that has been consistent for me over the years. And sometimes they didn't love it in the moment, but they came back, hey, coach, I appreciate it. And then some people never learn it, and that's okay too. But once you just do what you feel God put on your heart to do, for me at every level, that does not change. I don't care how talented you are.
That's great.
No, that stuff travels now. There's nothing sweeter than a former player, you know, either reaching out with those conversations that go about an hour and a half. I coached Division III in 1995, and a former player actually who's from Australia came to Indy to watch his niece, who plays for the Minnesota Lynx.
Wow.
Came to town a few weeks ago, and we got to hang out. I went to the game with him. Hadn't seen him in 20 years. Picked up right where we left off. It was just one of those. There's nothing sweeter than that. As coaches that want to aspire and want to grow, and they need to hear that, because, again, you can skip steps at times, and you can skip that by wanting to go from low major to the Big East in 2 days. Like, everybody wants to get everywhere so fast. But that stuff right there that you just mentioned, that travels. I don't care what level you're at. That stuff travels, that stuff lasts, because it's real, and that's the substance that these guys need. We're in a world full of style, but there's not enough substance in the world, and that stuff is substance.
Yeah, I think if you can just focus on that, everything works itself out. And as soon as put God first and let him center your life, God, order my steps, tell me what you want me to do, who you want me to impact, and whatever it is, just focus on the process of the kids and helping them grow and get better. And then I think everything else works itself out. And again, that doesn't mean you're going to go to the tournament. It doesn't mean you're going to win national championship, but it means you are impacting and you are doing your job. Like, we all have a role. You're just doing your job.
No doubt, man. No, and they'll never have it. They'll never have a doubt where you're coming from.
Absolutely.
So they'll never have a doubt. But man, before Dougie lands a point, go ahead, Dougie. I'm sorry.
I was going to say, you pour your passion into it, they'll pour theirs, or they won't be standing next to you at the end of it.
So, that's great. Yeah. That's it. That's it, though. That is 100% it.
No question. But yeah, I was just going to say, before Dougie lands the plane here, man, Corey, this was great, man. Number one, we appreciate you just blocking out some time to hang with us.
Yeah.
Your journey's an inspiration.
Thank you.
Because everybody listening to this is probably going to land in one of the areas that you've been in along the way. So they're going to pull something from this Golden Corral buffet career that you've had up to this point, man. Your journey's an inspiration, man. That it's so good to just, you know, why you're supposed to be doing what you're doing.
Yeah.
And our world and our business can't have enough guys that feel that way. So it means a lot for us that you joined us, but more importantly, just don't change. Don't change, man, because you're the right guy in this business for the right reasons. And like I said, we need more dudes like you.
Thank you. I appreciate, man. I appreciate you guys giving me the opportunity and platform. And I just hope I can continue to impact as much as I can now, wherever it goes. But I just want to do my part.
Yeah, no doubt. You ain't got to worry about that. You're doing it.
Yeah. Appreciate
you. Guys. Yeah. I was going to say, I'm sure it's going to go in the right direction. So
I hope so, man.
It will. It will.
So far it has. So, no, yeah. We're looking forward to – we'll keep BC on the radar moving forward. And
thank you.
We got a lot of people we got to keep track of next season, mate. But
yeah,
BC
no doubt.
On the radar.
Yeah. Please tell tell Coach Grant hello. I haven't been in touch with him in a long time, but please tell him I said hello as well.
I will.
Everybody, thank you all for tuning in to another episode of the Rising Coaches Podcast. Again, your host, Doug Caputo, Alan Major here. For everybody out there, keep working and keep rising. We'll see you soon. Hopefully, you'll be in the ACC coaching right next to Coach McCray himself, right? Keep working, keep rising, coaches. We'll see you all. Take care.
Help your players get more out of their training sessions with our friends at Dr. Dish Basketball. As the official shooting machine of Rising Coaches and the number one selling shooting machine in the world, Dr. Dish provides an experience packed with more reps, more motivation, and just plain out more fun. Be sure to mention Rising Coaches for an additional $250 off select Dr. Dish shooting machines.
I want to thank all our listeners for tuning in with us this episode. If you are not a member, want more content, or even be a potential member on our member spotlight to have your story heard, go visit risingcoaches.com. Follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and X at Rising Coaches. And don't forget to subscribe, leave a rating, and review so we can continue to keep rising together.